From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Hello and welcome. After a nearly eight-year hibernation, PDGA Radio is back, and we could not be more excited. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, are you ready to do this?
Oh, yeah. How are you doing today, Steve?
I'm good. I'm excited for the season. I'm excited for us to be starting this new show. So we've got kind of big shoes to fill, but I think it's going to be a ton of fun. You know, just give people an idea what we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about disc golf. We're going to cover pro events, any other relevant goings-on in the PDGA. We're going to have some player interviews and things like that. We're going to preview the season today, starting with the Las Vegas Challenge. We're going to hear from Ricky Wysocki and Paige Pierce. They're going to stop by and join the show. We're also going to chat with Steve Kaczynski, who used to run PDGA Radio. Pretty cool interview with him on tap. But Sarah's going to get things started talking to us about a big event over the weekend. So what happened this weekend out in California, Sarah?
So the season opener for many players was the 40th anniversary Wintertime Open in Pasadena, California. They play the Oak Grove course, which I have not played, unfortunately. I know that you have, so you might be able to tell us a little bit more about it. But it's the first course with permanent baskets in the world. So, you know, 40th anniversary, that's pretty big, more years than I've been alive. And Mark Horn and his wife Susie have been the TDs for all 40 years. But I hear they are passing the torch next year to John Tompkins. But yeah, this is a pretty good warm-up for the West Coast especially, and a lot of players are going straight from there right to the Las Vegas Challenge coming up this weekend.
Yeah, pretty amazing that every year we get to kind of have this event at the world's first disc golf course, which, yes, I have played it. I will say it's an interesting experience. Like, there's some, you know, signage issues and course flow issues, things like that. But obviously they changed the layout for this tournament. It's on a longer championship layout. And the fact that you've had the same people running it for 40 years is nothing short of amazing. And knowing I've hung out with John a little bit over the last couple years at the various big events. He actually caddies for Paul Macbeth. So I've gotten to chat with him a bit, and it seems like it's in good hands. I don't think that they would give it up to someone they didn't trust. So I expect that we're going to see, you know, more big things over the next coming couple of years, and maybe we'll have 40 more years of it. I mean, that'd be tremendous if we get to the 80th Wintertime Open.
Yeah, I definitely got to get out and play it. I just saw some footage today. The Central Coast Disc Golf published round one, and that course just looks beautiful. All the oak trees, just tons of foliage. It just looks like an amazing place to be. So definitely got to put that on my to-do list when I get out to California next time.
Oh, yeah, and it's, you know, little bit of disc golf history.
Yeah. So let's talk about the winners. So Lance Brown, coming on the scene from Burlington, North Carolina. He, you know, may not have been chosen as the top pick. He's sub-1,000 rated. He's 995. But don't let that fool you. He shot 40 to 70 points over his rating and won over, you know, Macbeth, Eagle, Anthon, Rico, just to name a few. So that's a pretty big win. And just some stats from 2017. He had two top 20 finishes at NTs, 26 at Worlds, and four top five A-tier finishes. So he is definitely somebody to look out for this year.
Yeah, I mean, let's just backtrack for a minute. Like, this is essentially Paul Macbeth's home turf. He, you know, granted, he's from Huntington Beach, Pasadena, you know, L.A. traffic isn't terribly close. But Paul Macbeth had won this event 7 years in a row, and eight out of the last nine. And I think the reason that he didn't win 1 year was that he didn't play it. So, I mean, every yeah. time he's played this event recently, he's won. And so for a 995 rated player like Lance Brown to come in and hold him off, because, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen this 1,000 times where Paul Macbeth has kind of gotten down early and he'll have to mount this furious comeback. And that's a lot of pressure. I mean, that's a lot of pressure for guys like Ricky Wysocki, who do this with him week in, week out. So to have a guy like Lance Brown, who maybe isn't the most experienced winning, this has just got to be a huge confidence boost for him to be able to hold off Paul Macbeth. And at the same time, he also chased down Eagle McMahon. Eagle McMahon actually had the lead going into the final round. I think it was two strokes. So Lance Brown chases down Eagle, holds off Paul Macbeth. I can't even imagine what that does for a player's confidence. I've never experienced anything like that. That's just got to be amazing.
I can't say that I've experienced something quite like that either, but yeah, and it was a pretty exciting finish. Of course, we didn't have live footage, but I was watching on the live scoring, and there was a couple moments during the last six holes where I thought he might, I don't want to say lose it, but he gave up a couple strokes definitely. So I'm glad that he was able to hold it off, and he ended up winning just by one. So pretty small margin, but glad that he took the win.
Yeah, it's a great story. Yeah. I mean, you know, looking at Eagle and his performance, I know on shows like this, you're not necessarily supposed to have rooting interests, but you know, we can analyze the game and we can be fans. And I honestly, okay, I really wanted to see Eagle pull this one off just because he's one of those players who's come so close the last couple seasons. And this is a pretty, I mean, granted, this is only A tier. It's not a national tour or a major, but with the other players who were at this event, being able to pull off a win in this kind of field, I think would have been leaps and bounds, you know, his biggest victory. And I'm really curious to talk to him out in Vegas this week. You know, he's always been very candid when I've spoken with him over the last couple seasons about the struggles he has in the mental game. Without seeing, you know, what happened at this event, I don't know if it was mental game struggles. I did talk to Ian Anderson, who is from Central Coast Disc Golf, and he told me that at one point, I can't remember exactly which hole number it was, maybe it was hole 12 or 13, he said mm-hmm. the Eagle was pretty much in line for an Eagle, ran it, missed, and ended up taking a six after, like, airballing the putts and getting rollaways. The basket was kind of on a hill. And so that's one of those things that you wonder if, you know, does he learn from that and maybe lay something up? Does he keep playing aggressively? You know, he's a pretty aggressive player anyway. So I would have really liked to see him get over the hump. But at the same time, you know, third place at this event is nothing to scoff at. You're still coming up above guys like Josh Anthon, Steve Rico, Bobby Music, Philo Brathwaite, so plenty of other big names on tour. And just looking at this score sheet on who is at this event, a lot of up-and-comers, a lot of people just, like you said earlier, starting out their season here, really cool. I wish I would have been able to get out to the event, but man, this is a good little preview for getting into the national tour season.
Yep, for sure. I'm super excited to watch some of these players, especially Lance Brown now. He hasn't been on my radar in the past, but I'm definitely going to be looking for him at I know he's signed up for Vegas, Glassblow Memorial, so definitely keep your eye out for him. So let's switch over to the FPO winner. So Jessica Weiss won in a playoff over Lisa Fagus. Jessica had some pretty hot rounds with a 62, 964 rated, 20 points above her rating second round, and that was pretty key to her win. Along with that, I was pretty excited for this field just going into it because there's so many little mini battles that I thought were going to ensue.
Right, that was cool. I remember we talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, but there's also some players that were a little bit lower rated that came to the top two and were on the top card. So we got Jessica Weiss and Lisa both in the 940s, and then Melody Weibel and Leslie Todd I thought were going to have a mini battle. But Kona actually shot up there and finished with about 20 points above her rating on average. So that's a pretty hot start to her season. And then there was a pretty good battle between Hannah Macbeth and Tierra Jewell there as well. So I think it was one of those fields that it wasn't just a, oh, we know who is going to obviously get first. There was a lot of little battles in there. So I'm glad to see that it was an exciting finish.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fun way to look at I've never really thought about looking at the different registration lists like that. But yeah, being able to break it down to make it a little more interesting, because, I mean, especially a lot of times, you know, we've seen the last couple years, you've got some of the same people at the top of the division sometimes. So if you can look a little deeper, look for patterns, look for maybe some people who will outperform their ratings, things like that. I love seeing Kona Panos do that well. You know, it's got to feel nice for her, given that she's become relatively popular, like a lot of, you know, through, she's very popular on social media and everything like that, but She hasn't really had a huge profile in terms of on the course yet. That's not like to knock her or anything, but she's still kind of developing and growing in her game. I think she'd probably tell you the same thing. She's still pretty young. So to see her have this kind of performance has got to be a big confidence booster. And then going back to the battle between Jessica Weiss and Lisa Fakus, I wonder if this is one of those mini battles we're going to see the whole season. I mean, their rating points are only 4 points apart. You know, I wonder if this could become like a little mini rivalry. I don't mean that in like they're going to not like each other, but just are these two, in your estimation, how do they kind of match up against each other, if you will? I know you're supposed to play the course, but where their skill sets are actually pretty different, right?
Yeah. Well, I have not played any rounds with Lisa, but I've played a few rounds with Jessica, and of course she's got that ridiculous sidearm. And what impressed me the most about Jess last year was her amazing backhand. I feel like normally when you're predominantly a sidearm player, your backhand is kind of just like, I throw it when I need to. But for her backhand and forehand are almost equally as strong. And that was really impressive to me last year. Haven't played as much with Lisa, but I think she is predominantly a backhand player. But she just, I mean, she is just so phenomenal. Everything that she does is just super consistent. She's one of those people that is sneaky. Like, she's not doing anything that's particularly outrageous. She's not throwing 500-foot shots. I don't know if she throws any rollers or anything like that. I haven't heard of her doing anything kind of like that, but she's just consistent, keeps it in the fairway, makes her putts, moves on. And I think, you know, that's kind of how you have to play some of these courses.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see how, you know, year two of full-time touring goes for Lisa Fakus. Cause you know, she made a lot of strides last year. It seemed like she kind of started to creep into that conversation of top five players. I think her extraordinary, you know, asset is her putting. She's hitting putts from, you know, 30, 40 feet with pretty regular ease for her. And, that's what's keeping her in it. So really excited to see where she, ends up this season.
Yeah, for sure.
Any other observations from the Wintertime Open before we move on?
Yeah, the one that I just kind of caught my eye was Chris Brophy in the 40-plus field. He shot 21 under par. I know it's totally different. You know, you're not playing with the same competitors and all that. But his score would have put him in fifth place, solo fifth place in Open, which I think is pretty awesome. I know he's from that area, so I'm sure he's pretty comfortable with the course. But I thought that was a pretty hot score in the 40-plus division.
Yeah, for sure. And Chris Brophy is just a super nice dude too. So to see him perform that well at this event, that's always nice. It's nice when the nice people do things. Not that they're not, you know, I'm not saying there's bad people or anything, but it's always cool when you know someone is just a hard worker and a good ambassador to see them perform well.
Yeah, so, for sure.
So hey, this week, I'm sure if people don't know, my goodness, I hope they do, but the PDGA National Tour is kicking off this week. I'm super excited. It's going to be the Las Vegas Challenge. It starts Thursday out at Wild Horse Disc Golf, or well, Wild Horse Golf Club, but it's essentially Wild Horse Disc Golf Club this week because they have three courses at this place. They take over the whole club. It's one of the really, beside of what I know of, at least on the national tour, you know, I mean, there's Milo McIver. It has two courses on the same spot, and then there's the International Disc Golf Center, which has, you know, three courses there and the clubhouse and everything. But in terms of there being, you know, like a restaurant and a pro shop and everything like that, this is all fully self-contained at this facility. I had a chance to go last year and it was great. I'm really looking forward to getting back out there. It's this Thursday through Sunday, one round each day. And we've got plenty to break down on this event. I think, you know, we're gonna take a look at the courses. We're going to find out what they kind of did to improve the event from last year, but always exciting to start the national tour season out west. Hopefully the weather is going to hold up. What are you looking for going into this one?
Well, I was going to say, I heard the weather is supposed to be a little on the chilly side, but hopefully the sun's out to keep it a little bit warmer.
Yeah, desert cold.
I'm just excited. I mean, it's hard to, we're going to do our picks in a few minutes, but it's hard to kind of say how everything's going to sort of shuffle out in the beginning of the season. You have no idea what kind of work people have put in the off season, what kind of momentum they have from maybe a good or a not so good 2017. Like with Lance Brown's performance this past weekend, you might see some people pop to the top that you may not have seen often before. So yeah, just excited to see where everyone kind of lands this first event.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing that people might notice, last year this event was called the Gentlemen's Club Challenge, and actually for the past like 15 odd years, I don't know the exact number of years out in Vegas, but the Las Vegas Disc Golf Club has run this event for that long. It used to be at Sunset Park. This is now going to be the third year. It's at Wild Horse. They went and made the smart move to change the name of the event from the Gentlemen's Club Challenge to the Las Vegas Challenge. There was kind of the, you know, the people of the club said that the people who started there were just, they got together and called themselves the gentlemen, but there's always the connotation of what a gentleman's club means, especially in Las Vegas and other recreational activities. So I thought it was a really good move that they changed the name. And then there was kind of a little bit of a mini controversy that popped up last week that I think it's important that we talk about and don't really shy away from. Essentially, one of the tournament fundraiser stamps for the event, someone posted on social media, and it had a very scantily clad woman. It wasn't something that I think was expected to be, you know, coming out of this event, given that there was the name change. And so the PDGA actually kind of put out a statement about it, because there was talk about it on social media. People were, you know, essentially, you know, kind of calling this one out as maybe not the most tasteful stamp. So
right.
I kind of want to read the statement that we have from the PDGA, and then we can talk about it before getting into the rest of the event. So it says, in response to the Goodbye Girl disc stamp image that was produced entirely as a fundraising effort by the Las Vegas Challenge Local Organizing Committee, the PDGA would like to make the following statement. The PDGA has policies in place that require tournament organizers to submit any official event logos through the PDGA office for review and approval prior to publication. The Goodbye Girl image that is stamped on discs is being used entirely as a fundraiser for the event and is in no way the official event logo. It is our understanding that the image is named Goodbye Girl, as this will be the last and final reference to the previous event title, the Gentlemen's Club Challenge. This image will not be given to any player as part of a player pack or event apparel, and is only being sold on various websites and also on site at the Wild Horse Golf Club to enhance the fundraising opportunity. As this was never seen as an official logo of the event by the tournament staff, but merely a hot stamp for an additional fundraising initiative, it was not submitted to the PDGA for approval. The PDGA remains firm in its stance of equality and empowerment of the entire membership, which includes our female demographic. This instance, however, has urged the PDGA staff to amend the language in the sanctioning agreement contract with these high-profile event TDs of future events to also include any and all graphics associated with the event being required for prior approval, not just the official logo of the event. So, not a terrible amount to unpack there. Essentially, it wasn't a logo that was approved by the PDGA. The PDGA has now gone to change their sanctioning agreement so that they will review all graphics. You know, I think the thing to take from this is, you know, Sarah, you and I both kind of come from a journalism background. I think we pride ourselves on being able to look at things from both sides, look at things objectively. In this case, you know, there was a significant fundraiser going on with this. It wasn't the official logo of the tournament, and so I think the TD, Jeff Jacquois, maybe has some leeway there. On the other side of things, looking at the other angle, you can definitely see how it may offend people or be viewed as distasteful.
Yeah, I mean, I think the statement pretty well sums it up. But I think just as we are continuing to grow disc golf among women, an image like that is not empowering for women. So that's pretty much all I'll say about that. But yeah, I think the PDGA took the appropriate steps and hopefully won't happen in the future.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously this is PDGA radio, but we appreciate that stance and what the organization did there. But moving into the rest of the event, I mean, we should talk there. You know, they did add $4,000 of additional cash to the Open Women's Division payout in an effort to try and get more women to come play the event. And let's talk about that event a little more in depth, because there's plenty to cover. So we've got 100, I think, as it stands right now, there are 189 registered players on the NT side. It's 164 men, 25 women. We've got play starting off Thursday morning, bright and early at 7:04 a.m.
West Coast that's time. Early.
That's early. It's going to be chilly. So if you're teeing off that early, be sure to bring your beanies and your hand warmers. So play on Thursday starts at the Disc Golf Values course. It was kind of cool. Like, I've had a chance to talk to the TD, Jeff Jacquois, a couple times over the last couple weeks just preparing for this event. And you can really tell the care that they've put into these courses and the facility there. And really, like, even when you talk about the design of these courses, he's got little nicknames for each course, which is pretty cool. So this first course, the Disc Golf Values course, he calls the Deceiver because it's the shortest of the three courses, but it ends up being a little more difficult than what people really think. There's kind of a triple island hole. It's the sixth hole, and it's kind of the signature of the course there. A little bit funky. So I'm curious to see. I think they made some brief changes to that one this year. I think they shortened it up a little, maybe made it a little more enticing to try and go for a birdie, because it's like a 294-foot par four, which is kind of odd, but you have the triple islands that you have to get. So that's the first course. Everyone's going to be playing on Thursday. And then on Friday, they move to the – oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, Friday is the first day at the Innova course. They play the Innova course twice. They play it Friday and Sunday for the final round. And this is what Jeff Jacquois calls the challenger. He said, really, here at this course, you really have to think about your shot shaping. There's hazards. There's OB lines. You have to really be very cerebral at this course. You know, last year, there are some spots you can take risks, though, and have the reward. And that's kind of what he likes to emphasize at this course. Hole 7 really stands out. There's a big water hazard on the right side. The basket's perched on a hill. I think it's 440 or 450 feet. And if you run it, you can eagle it. But there's also
lots of danger.
Oh, tons of danger. I think there's sand traps and cart paths. And I mean, there's some highlights where of the final round last year, Macbeth ran it, got the eagle. It was amazing. But in that same vein, I think people went into the water at the same time. So that's kind of what they're trying to play up at that course, is the risk reward. And then the third course is the Adidas Terex course. Pretty cool to have Adidas Terex, their outdoor brand, sponsoring a course for the second year in a row. This one's the longest of the three, hillside baskets, 1,000-foot hole, meant to be kind of an endurance test. And on moving day, third day of the event, that's just rough. I feel like that's really the one that's going to tax people the most.
And I'm assuming no golf carts.
No golf carts, unfortunately.
Sometimes that's the only time I'll play a ball golf course is when they make the golf carts available.
Yeah, you might as well. It's a long
not so
day.
Lucky.
It's a long day. You know, and something else that I want to bring up that they really did this year. Last year, I don't know if you, Sarah, if you watched much of the coverage of this event last year, but it was pretty clear. You could see there were a variety of teeing surfaces. Sometimes it was like a concrete cart path. Sometimes it was a rubber tee pad. Sometimes it was dirt next to the rubber tee pad. And, you know, players were kind of slip sliding in certain spots. And that was really one of the big things that I heard last year, was that the teeing surfaces were not really up to snuff. Mm-hmm. The club this year took that to heart 1,000 times over. And they have worked since last summer installing 54 new turf tee pads.
Wow.
So every hole at this event has a brand new turf tee pad, that, you know, the nice ones with the sand brushed into them, and all the work that comes with that. I mean, my hat goes off to these guys in this club who just, I mean, talk about blood, sweat, and tears. Maybe not blood and tears, but definitely a lot of sweat. They're out there putting these pads in during the summer.
Yeah. That's some commitment right there from the local club.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then, you know, what are you looking for out of the women's division at this event? Obviously, you know, we've got the standard bearers. It's, you know, the feature card has Katrina Allen, Paige Pierce, Jennifer Allen, Jessica Weiss. But what else stands out to you on the registration list? Who else are you looking to see at this event and see what they do?
Well, because I haven't played this course, but I'm assuming many of the holes are open ball golf style holes. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, there I'd like to see if mass distance actually is a benefit. So obviously I'll be looking at Jennifer Allen, Paige Pierce, Kat's got some distance. There's a bunch of people who've got distance, but obviously Jennifer Allen and Paige stick out a little bit. And yeah, just want to see how they all do on this golf course. The wind is probably going to come into play. You mentioned a lot of hazards, just seeing if people run for things, or, you know, kind of play it safe. And, yeah, there's a lot of, I'm just looking down the list. There's a lot of new names that I have not seen. There's Tierra Jewell again, who played this past weekend. You know, some newcomers that I've never seen before. So hopefully, like I said, we see some people get to the lead or chase card and get some new names on the board.
Yeah. And I mean, at this event last year, you know, Paige Pierce blasted out early, and I want to say she had like a 6 or 7 shot lead going into the final round. It may have even been more than that. And this course, though, especially that Inva course, there is enough danger on it to where I think that lead got whittled down pretty well. She made some mistakes early in the final round. Katrina kind of made a push. I think Paige ended up winning only by 2 or 3 after having a big lead. So it's not one of those courses where you can work up a big lead and just cruise to the victory either.
Settle, yeah.
Obviously, looking forward to a good battle in the FPO division, just like we are in MPO. You know, obviously, you know, last year it was the Ricky Wysocki, Paul McBeth battle. It was Simon Lizotte's first tournament back last year after injury, which was great. We had, you know, McBeth got an ace. A lot of stuff happened at this tournament last year. So it's just a great way to kick off the season. Someone that I really want to highlight going into 2018 in the context of this event is Austin Turner. You know, he's only 19, but he came out to this event last year and placed 7th. And that was really, that really kind of got the ball rolling for him the whole season. He ended up 4th in the national tour points, got 7th place at Worlds too. For him to come out to this event so early and play so well, was just really impressive to me. I don't know. When you're looking down at this registration list, who else sticks out to you besides, you know, besides the McBeths, besides the Wysockis? And first, we should say that the feature card for the first round, it's going to be on Jomez Productions. That is Ricky Wysocki, Ian McMahon, Simon Lizotte, and Nate Sexton, U.S. champion. So, interestingly enough, no McBeth on the feature card. We'll see if he makes it up to the next day. But what are you looking at this tournament? Who jumps out to you off the list?
Well, definitely Johnny McRae. I mean, he could play Masters, but he's still up there making lead cards, chase cards in the Open division. I'm super excited to see what he can do this year, give some of these young guns a run for their money. And someone else that jumps out for me is James Conrad. He's from sort of my region, Virginia, Tennessee, but I have followed him last year, and he has just had an amazing year and kind of made a name for himself. So I'm excited to see if he can use that momentum and follow through on some big events this year.
Yeah, you know, Johnny McRae blows my mind whenever we come to these events because, yeah, he's 45 or 46 now, and he's hanging with the guys in MPO. Dude, he smashes. My gosh,
yeah.
he throws discs so far that you wouldn't expect that he was the age that he was if you looked at where, if you gave someone like a blindfold and then walked them up to everyone's discs, they wouldn't be able to tell you that Johnny McRae was the age he is.
Sounds dangerous.
A tremendous player. Yeah, right, exactly. Well, I meant give him a blindfold and then, you know,
I gotcha.
Everyone's throwing, then walk him up. But yeah, he's, you know, he's able to hang with these guys still. And honestly, he performs really well on like open ball golf layouts too. So he's definitely someone to keep an eye on. On the flip side of that, going back to your thought on James Conrad, is he kind of has struggled traditionally on the open ball golf style courses. You know, struggle. I mean, he came in 17th last year at this event, but really had issues at Ledgestone and some other places, USDGC, where maybe, you know, not as wooded, which is kind of interesting because obviously he's a wonderful technician in the woods, but he's got like elite level power. We're talking like he can throw as far as Simon Lazat and Eagle McMahon. But for whatever reason, you know, I asked him about it last year. I think he kind of has trouble visualizing the lines when it's all just wide open. So he was planning on putting a little more practice in this season to try and in the off season to try and up his open golf course game. So we'll see if anything pays off.
Someone else that I was looking at is so Nick Wood made the list of top eight to look for in 2018. And I don't know a whole lot about him, but didn't you say that he started playing disc golf when he was 29, just started going on tour, and he's kind of someone to look out for?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's a player. I had a chance to talk to him, and I was just looking at all the registration lists early season. And I'd never heard of the guy. So he was nice enough. I shot him an email out of the blue and I was like, "Hey man, I would love to interview you. I'm seeing your name on all these lists," and got to learn a little bit more about him. Yeah, he didn't start playing until he was 29, helped his wife get their, you know, real estate business up and running. And, you know, the whole idea was if he did that, he'd go out on tour. Now he's out on tour. He's normally been a Pacific Northwest guy. He's hit some West Coast spots before. If you look back at his history, he's played, you know, he played Vegas last year, came in 26th place. He's played Beaver State a couple times. You know, he's played a lot of these West Coast events like St. Patrick's Classic and things like that. But I mean, you look at, he went to play the Wintertime Open, and I'm pretty sure he came in 10th place there. Yeah. Solo 10th place at the Wintertime Open. So he could be an interesting name to keep an eye on this week as well. A lot of fun. And I mean, we could probably go on for hours just dissecting the registration list of players to watch. Someone I want to make special note of, Las Vegas local guys named Steve Berger. There should be by now an article up on PDGA.com, a feature on him. He's essentially their highest rated pro. There's one other player, him and Andrew Rich are the two highest rated players in Vegas. Had a really nice chat with Steve the other week, just kind of about how he's grown into his game, how he's grown to be, you know, he's kind of outlasted some other guys in the area. Just a really nice guy. Interesting story. Hopefully people like reading that and checking him out. I think what we're going to do right now, let's take a little break. When we come back, we are going to catch up with the last two Las Vegas champions and, coincidentally, the last two world champions. Oh, I'm sorry. World champions from last year. Paige Pierce and Ricky Wysocki, they're going to stop by. We're going to have a chat with them. And then we'll come back. And, Sarah, we are going to make our picks for this event. Do you have some picks in store?
Oh, yes. It's on. Right.
Perfect. So join us back here in a few. We'll be back in just a moment here on PDGA Radio. Joining us now as the first official guest on the revamped PDGA Radio is someone you may have heard of before. Please welcome to the show four-time world champion and reigning Las Vegas champion, Paige Pierce. Paige, how are you doing?
I'm doing so good. How about you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for being our first guest. No pressure.
Absolutely. Congrats on the new job. And I hope this goes well. It sounds awesome.
Thank you. I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. What I'm curious about, you know, for people who maybe haven't kept up with what you've been doing early this season, you know, Paige went to Thailand, started off with a 10-21 rated round en route to a big win there at the country's first A tier. How was that experience over in Thailand?
Man, I mean, I could talk about it definitely for 20 minutes if you really want me to, but it's something you honestly just have to be there for. It's like just the whole vibe, and not only of the tournament, just like in Thailand in general, it's just like everybody's smiling. Like everything is so beautiful that, you know, and then, you know, when you add the tournament into it too, it's just like, you know, that, you know, everyone loves being at tournaments. So, you know, to add those two things together, it was just, it was unforgettable for sure. But I will definitely be back, hopefully every year, definitely next year. it was cool to see 16 countries represented. And Nigel, the TD, he like went above and beyond just to make sure that people got out there, you know, because it's quite a travel for a majority of the tournament. So he really took on a lot under his plate and I would say he knocked it out of the park in my opinion. And you know, I've never played on a course like that, so it was just all around just a great experience.
Yeah, now I actually talked to Nigel before the tournament, and he said, you know, you'd been there for a week or so before the event and hadn't even played any disc golf because you were just experiencing the country. So what, I mean, what was the most, I'm sure there were a ton of amazing things there, but what stands out the most in your mind after that trip, the newest or most exciting thing you got to see or do there?
That is actually like a very hard question to answer. Like a minute ago, I think I used the word unforgettable.
Right.
Which I've never meant that more. I actually like, and I don't write or read very much either. Side note, but I wrote a journal every day just because much happened every day that like I didn't want to forget any of it. And so it's like it would be so incredibly hard for me to pick one, but I would have to say like. Maybe the second day of the tournament. So I definitely love playing disc golf and competing in disc golf in the tournament, but it was, you know, being in another country, you kind of want to explore too. So, the second day of the tournament, we got a Thai style boat shuttle over to this island where there's only 9 baskets. But that's still more than how many people live on the island. So you can imagine how small it is.
Right.
And it's just literally every tree you see is a palm tree with coconuts falling. And, you know, the women around the course are like grabbing them and handing us fresh coconut. And it was just incredible. And, you know, then we were done for the day at maybe like 3. So that still gave us the rest of the day to go explore. And we rented motorbikes, so we just when the tournament was over and we got back on land, we just got on the motorbikes and like went to all these like night markets and just like hopped around with no real plan, I would say, just kind of like and no GPS, no phones. Like it was just very refreshing. It was really cool.
That's amazing. You're making me very jealous that I was not also there. So hopefully that one keeps going on the calendar and it's going to be
something
people can still keep going to.
Absolutely.
Now, I mean, shifting back to, I mean, you almost have to kind of come back to reality coming home, right? And going back on tour and everything.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It was like man, it was crazy. Like I said, everyone was smiling, like such a good vibe. And then like the second I landed in the States, you know, I'm like still smiling like on cloud 9. And, you know, everyone around me is just like in a rush and upset and just complaining. And I was like, oh, man, here we go. We're back to life.
is that something, though? I mean, can you kind of try and take a little bit of that Thailand island vibe with you on tour at all? Like, is that something you're going to try and recapture as much as you can?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's like a huge goal of mine, actually. It was just like so refreshing. Just nobody was complaining. Nobody was like, even though the language barrier was so big and like we couldn't really understand each other a whole lot. Like, you know, whether it be, you know, our server or whoever, you know, you were like still smiling, you know, you had no words, but you were still pointing at stuff and like smiling. And you know, here, if you find yourself having to repeat yourself, it's like, how can you not hear me? You know? And so I think it's a like side goal of mine, I think, to kind of just keep that going. And I think it'll translate good on the disc golf course as well.
Now, speaking of other goals, you're coming off a huge season. I think if I counted off correctly, 21 victories, you had both, you know, the National Tour and Disc Golf Pro Tour Series titles, your 4th World Championship. Obviously, you've set the bar incredibly high. How do you follow up on that this year? What are you looking to? I mean, I guess how do you improve on that?
honestly, I don't know if I will ever, or that's hard to say, but I don't see myself having the same results in any year, let alone this year. It was crazy, and I couldn't believe it until it was over, you know. I didn't want to jinx it, but I think I will still obviously be able to compete and win and a lot. But I think that, and I hope that it kind of was some motivation for other players to kind of take a step forward in their game, whether it be mental or, learning a new skill or what. But, I do this because I'm passionate about competing. And, I'm actually just more anxious to see the competition, let alone not just where I'm going to stand, but I just love that feeling coming down the stretch and, having to give it your all and seeing if you can execute in that moment. So I absolutely hope that it turns into 21 wins again, but I think that's going to be a little bit harder to do this year.
Sure. Sure. Now you are coming up on another milestone. You're a few victories away from 100 career wins. Have you thought about that at all? Do you maybe know how you might celebrate if that actually, if and when that happens?
Funny. I didn't know that I was that close. I knew I was in the 90s at the end of last year, but you just reminded me that. So yeah, that's going to be very exciting when that happens. And I don't necessarily have a plan, I would say, but just hanging out with all my friends and celebrating, I guess, some smiles and maybe some beers.
Very nice. Now, not trying to jinx anything, but there is, if I've done the math correctly, there is a possibility that could come at the GBO, which would probably be a nice little home course.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
Situation, not home course, but you know what I mean.
Right.
On dynamics, so that'd be great. Shifting, looking toward, Vegas this coming week. You obviously won there last year. They've got three tracks there. Which one do you feel, is there one that suits better to your game there out of any of the three?
I wouldn't say so. I honestly, it's hard for me to even pick the courses apart because they're very similar to each other. With the terrain out there, it's not very easy to have a lot of different holes. So, and not that that's a bad thing by any means, but it's just a little bit redundant out there. So it's in a good way because it suits my game quite well. It's just long holes and open for the most part. And so I feel like, as long as I'm staying in bounds out there, and same with Memorial actually, but as long as I'm staying in bounds, I think I have quite a big advantage just because I throw, maybe 40 to 60 feet farther than most of the field.
Right. I know when you're in Vegas, obviously there's plenty of other stuff to do besides disc golf. I'm not expecting you to tell us that you go out and party every night when you're in Vegas, but what do you like to do when you're there, besides the tournament?
Yeah. So, I'm an open book. I don't mind you asking any question you have. That's your job, but I wouldn't say party, but Vegas is for gambling. So I definitely, the first time I ever went to a casino, I won $1,400. So I kind of got addicted there for a little bit, I did it once, I can do it again. That's all they get you. But yeah, so I was, every year, actually, I've been out gambling most nights. Jonathan Ray, he's a big gambler too. So last year we kind of went every night, but, I actually was thinking about that. I'm going to make it a point to not, of course, one night, but there's just no need. I've lost money every time since that $1,400 time. So,
Of course.
So this year, with my new van, won't be staying in a hotel. So I think, and all the campgrounds are in concrete parking lots, like in the city, which is crazy. So we're going to stay outside of town a little bit, like 30 minutes, like over by this lake. So probably most of it will just be like campfires and just chilling.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before I let you go, I know it's a busy week leading up to Las Vegas, but I want to hit you with the lightning round. I'm going to give you just 10 questions, rapid fire. You give me the first thing that pops in your head for an answer. Does that sound good?
Okay. All right. Is it like a one-word thing or like three words or something like that?
Your call. Whatever you're comfortable answering with.
Okay. All right. Let's do it.
First one. Favorite course on tour?
Maple Hill.
All right. Toughest course on tour?
Ooh, Maple Hill.
All right. Best food on tour?
Oh my gosh, I feel like an idiot for saying this again, but when I go to Maple Hill, there's this place called New Cafe. You have to try it. New Cafe. Okay. Yep.
Is that in the town?
It's right by
Worcester?
Maple Hill. Yeah. Leicester?
Or Leicester. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Best sport, and you can choose play or watch besides disc golf.
Ooh, football.
Football. Okay. Your dream car when you were a kid?
Ooh, a Nissan Xterra.
All right. not as flashy as maybe. So
No, not at all. I just liked the look of the thing on the roof, and it was like sporty.
Yeah, I'll give you that. All right. One person, live, dead, whoever, that you want to have dinner with?
Dinner with? Anna Kendrick.
Oh, nice. I like that one. All right. What would you be doing if you weren't a disc golfer?
Teaching disc golf. Does that count? Or you want something else?
I can count it. That's fine.
Okay, cool.
let's see here. All right, three more. Casinos or clubs? I probably know your answer.
Bars.
Bars. All right, I like it. Yeah.
Pool bars with a pool table.
All right.
Yeah.
You're stranded on a desert island. You only get to watch one movie ever again. What's it going to be?
7 Pounds.
I don't think I know that movie.
It's with Will Smith. It's a tearjerker, but it's my favorite movie. It's really good.
All right. Last one. Cats or dogs?
Ooh, cats. I gotta go with Spouty.
Nice. Is that that's Eric and Tina's cat, right?
Yeah.
Very nice.
She's my niece. Tina sends me a pic every day and says something about it.
That's amazing. Well, Paige, thank you for your time. Looking forward to catching up with you more throughout the season, and best of luck this weekend in Vegas.
Thank you so much. Are you going to be out there?
Yeah, we'll be there.
Awesome. I'll see you there.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
That was Paige Bye-bye. Pierce. We'll be back on the show in just a minute. Joining us now on PDGA Radio is two-time PDGA World Champion and defending Las Vegas champion, Ricky Wasocki. For those who don't remember, Ricky won the event last year in Vegas, averaging just a hair over 1061 rated golf over four rounds. Rick, thanks for joining us. How you doing today?
Doing great. Doing great. Just got done actually practicing the Vista del Camino course, one of the courses being used for the Memorial. That's my off-season home course when I'm in Arizona for the off-season. So just been... Got done with practicing there. Now I'm getting ready to head to Vegas tomorrow.
Awesome, man. So you got a little head start on the Memorial. You'll have a little head start going to Vegas early. How's the off season though? How's it been? I mean, I know end of last year, last season for a lot of people was a grind. What'd you do to kind of really take off and recover this off season a little bit?
Yeah, you know, for the first part of the off season, I didn't really play too much disc golf. I think I took like a whole month or month and a half off. Most of the month of December, I took off, and that was just basically my rebuild month, just to kind of regroup after last season. Like you said, you know, I needed a month off of just doing, you know, a bunch of different stuff. I ended up starting to play a little bit more ball golf just to get my mind off of disc golf a little bit and kind of refresh and just do something I really enjoy. And I enjoy disc golf, but you know, it's at a different level. I started running. You know, I like to run. I here in Arizona, I do a lot of hiking also. So there's a lot of different stuff that I was doing in the meantime. And I started actually working with Disc Golf Strong also, the trainer that has been posting a lot of videos that people, a lot of you people, followers and listening to this radio will actually, I'm sure you guys, a lot of them have seen that. And he's doing a lot of good content with the players, and not just with the players, but he's also doing workouts and showcasing a lot of different warm-ups and stuff specifically for disc golf. So I think that's really cool, and he's really releasing a lot of, you know, stuff that people can really relate to and incorporate into their disc golf rounds and you know, even just in the off season like I did.
Now what's something that I believe is Seth Muncy. What's one thing he really helped to integrate into your workout routine this season that you maybe weren't doing before that you've noticed has been particularly helpful this season?
So, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, Seth's got a great background. He's worked with an NHL organizations, and he knows, let's just say he knows his stuff. He knows he breaks everything down, and he doesn't just tell you workouts. He gives you workouts, but then he explains what's going on and what muscle groups you're working and why the movement is actually helping your range of motion, your mobility, and he works a lot with stability also. So a lot of his workouts, I like them because it actually works. You know, some of his workouts are working, you know, two or three different muscle groups. You may be doing like a rowing type exercise, but the way you're situated on your knees, you're like, all your body weight is going into that row motion, but then your core has to stabilize to stand. It's like a kneeling row almost. So you're one leg's up, one leg's on the ground, and you, based on the position that you're in, your body wants to lean towards the side of your, whichever arm you're rowing with. So then the other side of your core has to engage to stabilize your body. So it's almost like you're working two different muscle groups with your core having to stabilize while doing the row. And then you switch arms and it's vice versa. So it's a lot of that kind of stuff that really, you know, you're almost knocking two birds with one stone as far as the workout routine that he's got going. And it's just a wide variety of different things like that, like the row exercise, the, you know, a lot of the working with a lot of bands movements. And so doing a lot of that which is similar to the disc golf throw, and doing actually a lot of on the ground workouts, like crawling exercises, actually, that we actually did a lot of that. And oh, wow. You know, it's so he was explaining it to me this way, like when you're young and you're, you know, playing with your buddies and you fall out of a tree, you're really, you know, your muscles are really, you know you just get right back up. But so basically what's happening is you're doing a lot of the exercises like when you're young, you know, like crawling and a bunch of different things. And it's actually, the way he's explaining it to me, it keeps your muscles young, and it does. Like I said, I don't know exactly what it does, but it, like a lot of the exercises, you wouldn't think that would be a good exercise, but once he explains it to you, the way he explains everything, is really, you know, really makes sense in your head. So yeah, we were doing a lot of crawling exercises. Let's see, a lot of stuff just without weight, just mostly body weight movement. And certain movements like planks, one-arm planks, you know, like leg lifts and that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, there's a good mixture of band workouts, you know, on-the-ground workouts, like I said, crawling, stuff like that.
Nice, nice.
And, yeah, so there's a wide variety of different things.
What's your longest plank? Have you timed out a plank?
So basically, I haven't timed one out, actually, so most of his workouts are build-ups. So like you'll do a regular plank and then you'll actually do a one-armed plank. So it's actually like, so, you know, for a couple weeks you'll do a regular plank for like, you know, 30 or 45 seconds or, sure, minute, sure, or however. And then, so I'm not really going for time. It's more of like explore. So you'll do it, you know, and like brace your abs. So it's, you know, while you're doing it, so it really engages your abs. So I can't say I've timed one out. But like I said, we're doing, you know, where you're lifting one arm and one leg and then switching, you know, doing that for 5 or 10 seconds and holding it. And so, you know, a lot of that stuff really, you know, is challenging. Especially, like I said, plank, you know, we started off with just doing planks, but built up to doing one arm and then eventually, you know, one arm and one leg, that kind of thing.
Nice. Now, looking ahead to Vegas, I mean, you know, looking back at last year, you had a tremendous event there. I went back and looked. I'm pretty sure you own the Disc Golf Values course record there from the opening round. So I guess the question follow up with this is, you know, do you feel that that's the strongest course that suits your game there, or which one of those three courses do you feel like really plays well for your game?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, like you said, I shot the course record there last year. They made a lot of different improvements, and it's actually, you know, with there being three courses, I kind of get them mixed up a little bit. But once I get out there, I'll have time. But I think that, yeah, that one sets up for my game the best out of all of them. I mean, I'm going to obviously prepare the best I can, but yeah, you know, that course, you know, I feel really comfortable out there, and I just feel like the holes and the way they shape really fit my game really well. So I think it's just a sign of me feeling really comfortable with pretty much every shot on the course. But yeah, you know, the whole venue is just, you know, it's got so many great shots, and it's in most tournaments, you know, three courses you think is too much, but out there it's all in the same complex. It's all at the same venue, and they're all really well designed on a, you know, spectacular piece of property. So, you know, I don't think a lot of the players mind the fact that there's three rounds, but for me, it's, you know, my preparation is, you know, I like to play at least two rounds on each course minimum. So, you know, that means me going up, you know, 4 or 5 days early to play, you know, maybe two rounds a day, certain days, that's what I have to do to feel comfortable. So, you know, that's why I don't really normally play the wintertime opens, because, you know, I'd much rather put a little bit more practice time and reps in the bigger tournament. And I think you're going to see that a little bit more this year with me. And so, yeah, that's my strategy. And that's really the best way for me to feel comfortable going into the first event like Vegas.
Now, if you're going to be up there 4 or 5 days early, you probably got a little downtime. What else are you doing while you're in Vegas? You hitting well, the tables, or do you go to the clubs, or what are you doing?
So actually, it's funny. Normally, so for me and my, you know, what I'm doing right now for my career, it's basically, you know, once the Vegas season starts, I basically turn all the stuff off. I'm not golfing as much. I'm not playing basketball. And I save that stuff for the off season. So I have a trip at the end of the season for Vegas after most of the tournaments are done. So that's when I do most of my, you know, partying and that kind of stuff to get the real true Vegas. You know, we went to the Omnia nightclub last year. I think it's a nightclub, and I had actually never really been to a nightclub in Vegas, but it really is amazing. I mean, just the atmosphere and the you got girls swinging from ropes and the top of the club, and you got these crazy strobe lights, and it's a cool scene, and it's definitely something you got to experience. So, but yeah, I save that kind of stuff for, you know, the time when I'm not playing a tournament. Sure. And I might go down to the strip and hang out, and, you know, but no, I'm not going to go, you know, I'm not going to go ham. That's for sure.
Yeah. Hit like a couple, hit maybe a buffet or two, something like that.
That's about it. I'm definitely a buffet connoisseur. I love that. I love going to the, you know, I think the Caesars is a great buffet. They got, you know, I love really like crab legs. So I love the crab legs there. It's all you can eat crab legs. You can get for like $25, $30, which is a good deal. And so, yeah, you know, I do the buffets, and, you know, I'll go check out, maybe walk around. I like walking around and checking, you know, people watching and going to see all the street performers. So there's a lot to do, even if you're not, you know, partying every night and doing the whole typical Vegas scene. So, yeah, you know, that's why Vegas is so fun, is you can, even if you're not partying, there's something for everyone. You can just go in and out of the, you know, different casinos to get the different themes and get different feels. And like I said, roller coasters, and there's shows. I like the Cirque du Soleil shows are really cool. I like that. A lot of times they put the Cirque du Soleil passes in the players' packs. Not the Cirque du Soleil, but like show tickets. They'll put like, sometimes it's like, you know, hypnotists, sometimes it's comedians, and so it's just different shows you can go to, and a lot of times they include those passes in the players' pack, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, I mean, you're still young, but you've accomplished a ton in your career. You know, majors, a couple world titles, but there's still a couple kind of white whale type events out there, kind of eluding you. What are your biggest goals heading into the 2018 season?
I think for me it's just going to be finding my game early and really just, you know, because. Before, you know, like Memorial is one event that I've always just really I don't know what it is about it. I think, you know, like I said, I don't know if it's just that's the tournament that I always decide to not play well at, but it's not really that I don't play well. It's just, you know, I just don't play, you know, great. I just play about average for my skill set, and I normally get what seems to be like, you know, between third and sixth place most of the time. And like I said, that's not, you know, of course that's not the end of the world, but you know, I want to have, you know, I want to eventually get myself a chance to win that event. So that's definitely one of the, I think, three events that I want to win next year or this year. Of course I want to win them all, but in, like you just said, there's certain events that I've just never, you know, haven't played that well at, and that's one of them. The other one's, you know, European Open. That's not, I don't think that's available this year. But the other one is also USDGC.
Sure.
But yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is just going to be find my game early and really just, you know, just feel confident in every tournament and really just feel, I think, and for me to do that, I think it might be taking a couple more weeks off here and there than last year and really try and skip the tournaments where I didn't feel 100% mentally and physically. And that way, you know, I'm not hurting my rating and ranking and all that stuff by playing, you know, half a tank is what I like to say. Half a tank, you know, like when you're playing, I always like to say the well, it starts at first of the year, the first term of the year, it's full, and it slowly just gets dwindled a little bit and a little bit. So in order to refresh it, you gotta take time and take breaks to get that well refreshed and filled back up. So. But yeah, you know, it's for me, it's, you know, it's a lot of the off season practice is over and I put a lot of work in to keep my game at a high level and now it's just gonna be going out there and doing my thing and staying in the right mental state to perform and throw the shots and execute at the right times like I know how to do. And so yeah, it's gonna be fun. It always is fun come tournament season. You get a little bit more hyped and you know, each year it's always fun to start out west and get the Vegas feel and the memorials just to kick off the year.
All right, before I let you go, I'm going to kind of spring this on you, but I'm going to hit you with the lightning round. I'm going to give you rapid fire, like,
okay, cool.
10
like
questions.
It.
You just give me the first thing that pops in your head.
Okay. Good
you deal. Ready?
Yep.
All right, first one, favorite course on tour?
Milo MacGyver.
All right, toughest course on tour?
Maple Hill.
All right, best food on tour?
Barbecue.
All right. Like in KC, North Carolina, where are you at?
I'm a KC barbecue guy.
All right, cool. All right. Best sport to either watch or you can say play besides disc golf.
Golf.
All right. Dream car you wanted when you were a kid.
GTR.
All right. What would you be doing if you weren't a disc golfer?
Let's see. That's a good question. HVAC technician.
All right, you studied that a little bit, right?
Yep.
There you go. All right.
Yep, I went to school.
Here.
I got a permit.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Yep. I'll call you up next time I'm having
exactly,
trouble.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. Yep. Casinos or clubs?
Casino.
All right. You're stuck on a desert island. What movie do you take with you that you could only watch over and over?
Disturbia.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, right. It's got like three genres of movie in it. It's got like scary, funny, and thriller. So that's why I chose it.
There you go. All right, I got two more. One person, alive or dead, that you want to have dinner with?
Tiger Woods.
All right, and last one, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
I had a feeling it was going to be dogs.
Yeah. Were you taking a guess?
I just think you funny. Struck me as a dog person, man. So.
Yep, exactly. You got
well,
it
Rick,
right.
As always,
that was
man.
Fun, dude. I like
I
that.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm trying to do something cool. A little new, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, I like
it.
That a lot. It's kind of quick and to the point. I really
exactly,
like that. That's a good
exactly.
idea.
Well, hey,
spiced
man.
Up a bit.
Always appreciate the time. Thank
no
you for
worries,
stopping by
dude.
The show. And best of luck this season. I know we'll be catching up plenty, but
for
good
sure.
luck out here in Vegas this week.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon,
thank
buddy.
Thank you. All right, that was Rick Sasaki. We'll be back on the show in just a minute.
Awesome.
Thank you again to Paige and Ricky for taking time out of their schedule as they get ready for Vegas to stop by and talk to us on the show. Now, it wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't make our picks. All podcasts do them. It's fun. Everyone's a fan. We like to do it. Sarah, are you ready to make some picks for this event?
I'm ready.
Good. First, what we need to do is we need to kind of lay it out. This isn't going to be, you know, someone gets to make a pick every week, and then there's no accountability because Sarah and I are a little bit competitive, and we want to be able to give each other a hard time every week. So we're going to make this into a full-on points competition. We don't exactly have a title for it yet. If any listeners want to, you know, at us on Twitter at PDGA or shoot us a line, radio@pdga.com, come up with some fancy name for this segment. We are all for it. We love a little bit of interaction with listeners. But basically, here's how it's going to work. We are each going to pick a winner from the MPO and FPO division. We're going to alternate each week. So this week, Sarah's going to go first. Whoever she picks, I cannot pick. So I might have to think on my feet a little bit, but, you know, where's the fun in duplicate picks? I figure we might as well change it up and make it a little harder on the other person. It'll even out because I'll get to pick first next week for the Memorial. So we're going to take a first place person in each division, and then we'll, you know, points will be awarded where if Sarah were to win, she'll get 12 points for picking the right person, or I would get 12 points for picking the right person. The other person still does get some points. Let's say, for example, my pick comes in third place. I would end up getting 8 points because that's the reverse of, you know, top 10 standings. And then we're also going to do a person that we think is a for sure thing to land in the top five who is not one of our winners. So without further ado, and those will be 3 points each. Hey,
what's the prize? We haven't decided what the prize is yet.
That's a good question. Well, you're probably going to be at Worlds later this year. I'm going to be at Worlds later this year.
Ooh.
So how about, even though we have Worlds to pick, how about this?
Well, obviously I'm picking myself.
Whoever's losing, you know, buys the first round of maple syrup up in Vermont.
Perfect.
All right, so without further ado, Sarah, let's hear your pick. Let's start it out with your MPO pick.
All right. So this may be the obvious choice because he has won in the past and he's familiar with this course, but I'm going with Ricky. So sorry, not sorry. I just want the points and I've got faith that he's going to win. So
hey, that's a good strategy. I can't fault you for that. I'm going to go with the obvious number two. I'm going to take Macbeth because I feel like he's kind of due right now. I shouldn't say he's due. I mean, he's still, it's so funny. Like, you know, he won plenty last year. He's got the ability to win this event easily. I think maybe he'll be smartened coming off of wintertime real quick, not winning that one for the first time. Maybe he'll have a little extra motivation going into Vegas. So I'm going to take Macbeth. Who do you like for your definitely going to land in the top five bonus pick?
My bonus pick is Simon. I think he's going to do pretty well on the golf course. He's probably got a little extra fire, you know, coming back into the season. And I just really enjoy watching him play. He's exciting to watch play. So that's my pick.
Especially out here when he can just like do incredible things with frisbees and have all the open space in the world. I think that's a good solid pick. I think I'm going to go, we talked about him already on the show. I'm going to go top five lock Johnny McRae. I think with his history at this event, I think he came in fourth last year. His history on ball golf courses, it's early in the season. He's going to be fresh. I'm locking Johnny McRae in as my top five bonus pick. Let's move over to FPO. And Sarah, again, gets the first pick. I wonder who she's going to take.
So for top FPO, again, going with the obvious choice, Paige Pierce. She's got the distance. She's got the experience. She's just a super well-rounded player, as we all know. And again, I want to win the points, and I think she's going to win.
Yeah, I did not give myself a good week to not go first. Because, I can't fault you for that. I will, you know, as we go through the season, I think we'll get a little more separation in terms of maybe we won't pick the same top two people every time. But since it is so early in the season, you kind of have to go a little bit more on what you know based on skills and everything like that. And so if Paige Pierce is out of the mix, I'm going to take Katrina Allen. She pushed hard to come back at this event last year. Obviously, she's, you know, a phenomenal talent, tremendous distance, plays really well at this course. I think that's my FPO pick is going to be Katrina Allen. How about your top five FPO lock?
I'm going Jessica Weiss. Like I said, I'm super impressed with how far her backhand has come, and I think she's just a super versatile player. She does get really good distance, and she's super accurate. I think she's going to, you know, slay pretty hard on this course. So, yeah, definitely top five for Jessica Weiss. What about you?
I like it. Yeah, I think that's – I like that pick. She won this event in 2016 when it was not the NT yet. So she's got experience at Wild Horse. I'm going to go with Jennifer Allen. She played really well here last year. Again, ball golf course distance.
Yeah.
She is the world record women's distance holder. She smashes. You know, I had a lot of fun going back through and, like, clipping some highlights from this event last year and just seeing some of the shots that she was putting out there, these gorgeous flex shots, you know, putting herself parked in some holes. I think this is an event that top five for her. Honestly, if she would be finishing outside the top five, it would probably register as a disappointment for her, just knowing the expectations she holds on herself. So for I'll sure. go with Jennifer Allen as my top five lock.
All right. So, I like it.
Yeah. We'll be sure to update this next week. I'm sure there will be plenty of bragging and all those nice things that we will say to each other throughout the season as we do this event. And the trash talk will keep going. So we're going to take another break real quick. When we come back, I'm going to talk to Steve Kaczynski. He ran PDGA Radio from 2008, 2010. Pretty cool interview with him coming up on tap. And then we got a little bit more to wrap up the show. We'll be back here in just a minute on PDGA Radio. Welcome back to the show. I'm excited for this next guest. One of our predecessors here at PDGA Radio. He ran the show from 2008 to 2010, did about 100, or actually more than 100 episodes. You know, really nice, well-produced, polished episodes. Please welcome to the show Steve Kaczynski. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Steve. It's good to hear PDGA Radio getting back on the airwaves.
Well, we're excited. We obviously know, though, we have big shoes to fill. Between yourself and Brian Sullivan, this was obviously a tremendous product over the years, and you know we're happy to put our spin on it. But I want to talk about, you know, your time at PDGA Radio. I think it's important to kind of look back and see the evolution of how these things have gone. So, I mean, how did you first come to, you know, get into doing this? Obviously, Brian Sullivan took a break from it. How'd you jump in?
Yeah, Brian did it for a few years, and then he had taken a year off. I actually used to listen to the show quite a bit and was kind of like missing it. Where's my weekly little disco fix? And I had gone to college for radio broadcasting, got a degree, but actually as soon as I graduated, that was kind of the end of me really working in working in radio. I had like 3 years while I was in college working for both the campus station and a little group of five stations in town in Winona, Minnesota. Kind of did pretty much everything possible from, you know, being on air, morning guy, afternoons, nights, sports. Kind of ended up settling into more of the news kind of department of the station. So that's kind of where I got a lot of the news writing and gathering ability, which kind of lent itself into working for PDGA Radio. But really got into it because I got out of the radio station and still wanted to kind of put my degree to use that I was making all my monthly student loan payments on. So sent an email off to the PDGA kind of inquiring about what PDGA Radio was doing and why it wasn't on anymore, and expressed my interest that I'd be willing to get it back going again. And Brian Graham quickly and nicely replied back, and we got it going for the next year and did about 40 episodes a year for 3 years, did a bunch of stuff back in the day. You know, technology was different back then, so trying to do a live broadcast or even just getting stuff uploaded onto the internet was quite a bit different than it is today.
Oh, I believe it. I mean, what was the, you know, what kind of software were you using? I don't know if we want to get too techy, but I mean, like, you know, what were you using? How much time were you spending getting that show together? I mean, they averaged, what, 10, 12 minutes usually, right?
Yeah, he wanted us to keep it short. It was kind of always pushes to, I wanted to get more content in it, but we wanted to keep them kind of relatively quick and simple. I think most of them probably averaged around 15 minutes. Okay. Very few of them were over 20, But I was just using a simple little software I bought from Best Buy. It's called Magic's Music Maker. It's pretty simple, you know, correlates to any editing software out there. You know, you play around with it and you figure it out. But, you know, it'll take me probably about 8 to 10 hours on average to put together that one episode. I'll take one day a week and just set that aside as to I'm going to do the, you know, the radio stuff and kind of crank that out. Some weeks were a little faster, you know, once you do it for a couple of years, you can shave some time. You got the template down and all that already, but you know, yeah, it's a little bit of work and then just waiting for websites to load and get the results and transfer it over. I kind of wish I was doing it today. It seems like it'd be a lot faster, but
yeah, I hear you, man. I, you know, for people who maybe haven't listened to the previous version of PDGA Radio, all the episodes are archived on the PDGA website under the media tab. You know, what's a more memorable episode to you? Maybe a particular story you enjoyed the most, or even just a particular episode that was a headache to put together that you had to work on. Which ones stand out to you the most?
Probably wasn't even necessarily an episode itself, but I would go down to the World Championships, I think it was 08 and 09, and just kind of do some live daily updates. You know, instead of the once a week episode, we would try to put out a quick update every night that would kind of run down through the leaders and stuff. There were some other people kind of getting into doing the same type of thing at that time, but, you know, I would play my rounds during the day, then I would go back home, get on the internet and go around, get to talk with people, and then kind of spend the whole night where I should have been sleeping, uploading a program, like kind of like you hear a lot of the other people, like the disc golf guy, Terry Miller. He always talks about that. He, you know, he plays and then spends all night and never gets any sleep and all that. But it was really the World Championships, you know, getting out there, you know, hanging out with, you know, watching Dave Feldberg win his world title, Valerie Jenkins winning her world title. I was being the first person to go up to her and interview her about it. And then
that's pretty cool.
Next year was the Avery Jenkins and Josh Anthon battle, you know, extra holes and all that. So I was trying to run a live broadcast there where I had three different cell phones all kind of going one from the other end of the other, then hopefully going out in the world wide web. But, you know, it was just kind of cool getting out there, trying some new technology out and kind of being out there, you know, hanging out with a lot of cool golfers. It was actually roommates with Jeremy Colling the year he won his Am Worlds title. So it's kind of fun when I run into him and talk about the stories from back in the day.
Very cool. And I mean, he's a media voice of his own now with, you know, some of the post-production coverage that he does.
Yeah, he's got a great personality though. So yeah, I mean, he can pretty much do whatever he wants. It seems like he's just a good guy and a great disc golfer. You know.
For sure. For sure. So, I mean, what, you know, how did it happen that things ended up going off the air? What happened in 2010 to make it maybe not viable anymore?
It's hard to really pin it at one point. It was kind of how I mentioned, you know, there were some other people starting to get out there. Most notably, I know Bobby Brown, Cool Daddy Slick Breeze. He was one of the other main guys kind of traveling around and actually turning it into actual PDGA media instead of just a bunch of random people doing their own thing. And then, you know, everything, just technology was a little bit different. You know, sponsorship was always tough time to get. So I had some, you know, family issues. I was going through a divorce. There was a bunch of different things I think kind of all came together at the same time, or it was just kind of agreed, you know, numbers aren't there. Let's try to go into a different direction next year. And I kind of did. I ended up, taking a year or two off, and I ended up opening up a small little disc golf store up in Wisconsin, which has kind of had its hit or misses. And I've kind of just gone along and picked up a bunch of random gigs, you know, anywhere from working in a warehouse to traveling the country doing donkey basketball to what I kind of do right now is going around and help random music festivals and help run their food and beverage programs or do whatever else I have to do and make sure a bunch of big music festivals go off as good as they can.
As much as I want to talk about the music festivals, we need to please backtrack to donkey basketball.
Yeah, that's a popular one.
What on earth is donkey basketball?
It's a charity fundraiser, and it's kind of meant to just be a good time. It is kind of what it sounds like. It's donkeys and they're playing basketball. Well, I worked for people who own a bunch of donkeys, and it goes back generations in their family where they go around hosting donkey basketball games, basically a high school FFA group or some group in a high school will hire us, have us come out there, and they'll sell a bunch of tickets. They'll get some volunteers to ride or try to ride the donkeys and play a basketball game during it. But it's not so much the basketball. It's just a kind of entertaining rodeo kind of goofy thing. I was the MC, kind of cracking jokes at the people. And, you know, it's a wild ride. If you have some time, just go on to YouTube and check out some donkey basketball videos. I've got a bunch of good ones. You know, I've did about 300 random shows in about 20 different states over 3 years. And there's
wow.
stories and memories that can go on forever, but luckily no one ever got hurt. So, but it's kind of crazy watching people kind of accidentally do backflips off the back of a bucking donkey as they're trying to make a layup at the same time.
Were the donkeys okay?
Oh yeah. The donkeys were great. They loved it.
It's amazing. Well, I'll tell you what, if you've got more stories like that, especially if you're traveling around the country doing music festivals, I'm sure you'll be playing plenty of disc golf. You've got an open invitation to come on this new show anytime. We'd love to have you back again.
Hey, sounds good, Steve. I appreciate it. I'll definitely be out there, you know, spreading the love of disc golf, promoting it, and telling people where the good places to play.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Steve, for coming on. Again, I'd highly recommend anyone who wants to just learn a little bit more about disc golf and, you know, the history of the PDGA and PDGA radio, go listen to Steve's shows. They're on the PDGA website. Highly educational experience. Again, Steve Kaczynski, thanks again for your time.
Hey, thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hi, this is AJ Risley, and you're listening to the PDGA Radio Pro Tip. I've got one for the beginners and semi-beginners out there. One thing that I was taught a long time ago that I found out to be very important and influential to my game today is the fan grip. I know this might sound a little specific, but the fan grip helped me out a lot when I was developing my mid-range game. And I'll explain that real quick for you. Instead of curling your fingertips on the inside rim, go ahead and try and fan your hand out a little bit. There you go. And put your fingertips on the bottom of the flight plate. And that'll give you a little more spin compared to more torque that you might find with the power grip where your fingertips are on the inside of the rim. And the thing that that extra spin does for you is it gives you a little bit more control. And it also helps stabilize the flight of the disc, so you see a lot less wobbles right when you release it. So if you are trying to, you know, navigate the woods a little better, you know, work on those 200 to 300 foot straight shots with your mid-ranges and putters, try the fan grip. You will not regret it.
Thank you to AJ Risley for taking some time out of his schedule. He just set off to tour today. Looking forward to seeing him on the road this season. Really made a lot of growth last year and just honestly couldn't be a nicer guy. I don't know. Is there a nicer guy on tour, Sarah?
I think not. No, I mean, he's up there.
Yeah. So looking forward to seeing how AJ plays this season. Before we go, we're going to do a little segment that we're going to try and pump out every week. We're going to do our best. But Sarah, tell us what happened this week in disc golf history.
So this week, 2003 set the stage for you here. First national tour event, the Golden State Classic. It was played at La Mirada Park. It was one of the first courses built in 1976. And the inaugural TD was Tim Selinski, a name that is very well known, one of Innova's founders. And the thing that got me when I was looking up some of the stats about this, so winner was Steve Rico, who is still big on the scene. He was rated 1033 at the time, and he won just over $1,400 in a field of 65. So to put that into perspective, the total pro purse at that event was $12,000. And if you look at one of our bigger events last year, Glass Blown Open, The pro purse was $65,000. So, huge increase.
Yeah, we've come a little ways in 15 years. That's a good thing.
Yep. And, I mean, that's obviously due to sponsorship. Number of players has gone up and a little bit of an increase in entry fees. But yeah, so that was pretty exciting. Climo, another big name, obviously. He took second, only two strokes back. And then on the FPO side, Juliana Korver, who was rated 967 at the time, won $255 in a field of six. And Leslie Herndon, now known as Leslie Todd, ended second, five strokes back. So that was the first PDGA NT event back in 2003. And yeah, just looking down the list, there's a lot of people who played that event who are still pretty popular on the scene today. You got Climo, Bobby Music, Mike Young, Feldberg, Brian Schweberger, Avery, Cam Todd, Ari McCabe, Kevin McCoy, and then a couple ladies, of course, Juliana, Carrie Berlager, and Tita Ugalde, who just competed this past weekend at the Wintertime Open.
Nice.
Yeah. And then here's just a fun fact. The Las Vegas Challenge TD, Jeff Jacquois, came in 58th at that event that year. So come in full circle. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's nice. We're starting the National Tour this week. National Tour started this week 15 years ago. So I think that's a good way to end the show. What do you think?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Let's wrap it up.
Well, yeah, thank you to everybody who's tuned in for this first episode. We're going to be coming back most weeks, you know, when there's big events, we're going to be talking about them, previewing them, recapping them, excuse me, also recovering if we've been traveling to them. But do us a favor, reach out. We want to hear your feedback. If you've got anything for us, hit us up at radio@pdga.com. And if you enjoyed the show, please feel free to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think. Until next time, Sarah, I hope you have a great week. I'm looking forward to catching up some more next week. Have a good one.
You too. Enjoy Las Vegas.
Thank you. All right. We'll talk to you next time here on PDGA Radio.